Welcome to the Balanced Mind, a podcast dedicated to understanding emotion and achieving emotional maturity. We're going to dive deep into the roots of our feelings and ask a critical question. How can we manage emotion more effectively with greater wisdom? The goal is to help you grow in emotional intelligence, leading to a better quality of life and more fulfilling relationships in every area, from the workplace to your closest friendships. I'll provide you with a practical toolkit and insight to help you navigate life's challenges with greater emotional maturity and resilience. Hello, my name is Dion Bicycle and I am a supportive counselor. I am dedicated to helping you achieve a better quality of life. Welcome to the Balanced Mind. Let's begin. So today we're gonna talk about being a light traveler. When things on our path get too heavy to bear, we need to stop and we need to evaluate. What can we put down and what can we leave behind in order to have a quality journey ahead? See, we all had those days where the trail feels twice as steep as it did yesterday. You aren't sick. You haven't changed your pace, but every step feels like you're dragging the literal anchor through the mud. You call it a burnout or distress, but those are umbrella terms we use when we get tired. The truth is, your pack is full of unprocessed emotions. Most of us don't experience feeling like a passing rainstorm. We experience feelings like a collection of stones. When you don't process the feeling, when you push it down because you have to be strong, you know, you need to focus what's important. Feelings, we tend to say that feelings are not so important. And when we push it to the side, we think it will disappear. But it doesn't. It only converts. It changes from a temporary emotion into a trapped energy. And that energy has to go somewhere, right? Let's talk about the term called emotional shrapnel. In the real world, shrapnel is what is left after an explosion. It is a jagged, irregular pieces of metal that bury themselves deep into your body. This is usually after an explosion, and the metal bury themselves deep into your skin, and if they are not removed, they don't just sit there, they cause inflammation. They make it painful to remove in certain directions, because it's still there, and whenever you move, you can feel, you can still feel them. So unprocessed emotions are exactly the same way. Maybe it was a small explosion in your life, a comment from a boss, a cold shoulder from your partner. Because you didn't name it, a jagged piece of rejection or inaccuracy got buried into your psyche. And now the inflammation kicks in. Because every time someone gives you feedback, that sharp nose digs in. You remember what was said during that explosion. Then you get your posture. You start walking differently because you're acting to what happened. You're acting towards what happened. You start walking differently and you become defensive or withdraw just to avoid the pain of that sharp shifting. But the main thing is the pain is not of the current comment, it is what happened in the past that you remember that caused the pain. You think you're being tough by ignoring it, but you're actually just letting the sharpness dictate how you move through the world. So how do we get this sharpness out? It starts with a name. There is a powerful neurological shift that happens when we move from saying I'm stressed to say I am feeling overlooked. You're naming it. Dr. Dan Signal calls this name it to tame it. When you are feeling the weight of your amygdala, remember that is your brain's alarm system. And it's screaming, watch out, danger, danger, danger. You are in a fight or flight mode. You can't set the bag down because your brain thinks you're being haunted. But the second you use the language centers to name the emotion specifically, you activate your prefrontal cortex. We talked about this before in a previous episode. You literally bridge the two sides from your brain. The act of naming the weight creates a gap, a distance between you and the feeling. You realize you are the traveler carrying a rock. You are not the rock itself. So let's quickly check your backpack right now. Reach into your bag. Pull out one memory or one vibe that's been bothering you. Don't look at it. Give it a score. A scale of 0 to 10. Where 0 is the leaf and 10 is the boulder. How much energy is this taking to carry around? Is it like carrying a leaf around or is it like carrying a boulder around? If it is higher than 5, it is sharp now. It's creating a magnetic load that is attracting more stress and worry and obviously more fatigue. Your goal for the next 24 hours isn't to fix your life. It is to find a more specific name for that 7 out of 10 weight. In suggestion, is it maybe disappointment? Is it maybe fear of failing? Once you name it, the straps loosen. You've taken the first step to name it and setting it down. So you have done your audit and you named the shot. But for many of us, that instinct isn't to set it down. It is to hide it. We think that if we can just push the feeling deep enough under the water will still look smooth on top. Everything will look fine. But imagine you're in a swimming pool with a bright, inflated beach ball. The ball represents the named weight. Your anxiety, your grief, the feeling of not being enough. You don't want the other people in the pool to see it, so you use both hands to hide it under the water. And for a moment it works. You use both hands to hide it. From the shore, from the side of the pool, you look perfectly fine because you're smiling and you're making eye contact. But underneath, your muscles are screaming. You're using 90% of your strength just to keep that ball from popping up. This is experimental avoidance. We think we're moving on, but we're actually just holding down. When you're busy suppressing, you only have one hand free to live your life. You can't swim to the other side of the pool. You can't play with your kids. You can't truly connect because your primary focus is the buoyancy of your pain. Because pain has that buoyancy to keep on popping up at unwanted times. And here's the dangerous part. The deeper you push the ball, the more pressure the water exerts back on it. Suppressing doesn't kill the emotion. It concentrates it. Eventually, you get tired. You get a cold. Or you have a long day at work and your grip slips. Because that ball is under so much pressure. It doesn't just float to the top, it rockets to the surface. And obviously, it hits you right in the face. And it splashes everyone around you. This is why small things like a traffic jam or a dropped glass sometimes cause a total meltdown. It's not about the glass. It's the beach ball you've been holding under for 3 months finally breaking through. Remember, it's the beach ball skyrocketing to the surface. When we explode, it's usually just the physics of exhaustion catching up to us. What if you just stopped? What if you took your hands off the ball? The first thing that happens is a splash. It's messy. People might see your ball, the thing you're struggling with. You might have to admit, yeah, I'm carrying around some stuff right now. But then something incredible happens. The ball just bobs there on the surface. It's still in the pool. It hasn't disappeared. But you, your hands are free. You can move around. Acceptance isn't liking the beach ball. It's just acknowledging that it's in the water with you. When you let it float, it stops being a struggle. It starts being just another object in the environment that you are in. Sometimes the wind will blow it to the far end of the pool. Sometimes it will drift right in front of your face. But because you are not fighting it, it no longer has the power to draw you down. So let's look at another question. If you don't have to spend all day holding the ball underwater, what could you do with that energy? Think about the sheer amount of mental calories you burn every day trying to look fine. Imagine you can divert the power into creativity, into your relationship, or just into your own rest. The beach ball effect proves that the fight isn't always more exhausting than feeling itself. So next time when you feel like you need to press the beach ball under the water and keep it there, I want you to literally open your palms and say to yourself, you know, let it float. Let it go. And give the ball permission to be ugly in the way. Give it permission to be visible and to be present in the same environment as you. And you'll find that the water is much easier to navigate when you aren't trying to control the surface. Let's look back at the trail you've been walking on. You stopped to order your backpack. You decided to let the beach ball float. But now you're looking at the specific object you found in the bottom of your bag. You call it feeling bad. But in the forest of your mind, there are two very different versions of feeling bad. The first one is guilt. Guilt isn't a weight, it's your compass. It's that sharp, uncomfortable nudge you feel when your actions don't align with your values. If you promised to help a friend but stayed at home to sleep, that stinging feeling is your compass spinning north. It's saying, hey, you're off the path. You're not being the person you want to be. Guilt is adaptive. The focus on the action. It focuses on the action. I did something bad because it's focused on behavior. It gives you a map to fix it. You apologize, you make amends, and the compass settles. You put the tool back in your pocket and keep walking. Healthy guilt is what allows you to grow and stay connected to other travelers on the trail. But often, there is also shame. Shame is what happens when your compass breaks. It stops being a tool that points you home and starts being a magnet to attract everyday heavy, dark thoughts you ever had. Shame doesn't focus on the action, it focuses on self. It doesn't say, I did something bad, it says, I am bad. While guilt motivates you to apologize and repair the trail, shame tells you that you are fundamentally broken and unworthy of being on the trail at all. Because shame feels like an attack on your very soul. Your brain goes into threat mode. You don't repair, you hide. You pull the hood of your jacket up. You look at the dirt and you isolate yourself. Shame is a rock that disguises itself as a compass. It makes you feel like you're taking responsibility, but it's actually just pinning you to the ground. Now, how do we fix a broken compass? We have to change the language of our internal dialogue. This is what I call recalibrating. When you make a mistake, listen to the voice in your head. If the voice says, that was a poor mistake, I need to make it right. That's the needle pointing north, following it. But if the voice says, I am a failure, I'm always messing things up, that needle is spinning, it's a rock, and it's gonna weigh you down. To move from shame back to guilt, you have to externalize the mistake. Imagine the mistake is a hole you dug in the trail. You can't fill the hole. You can't bridge it. You can't walk around it. You are not the hole itself. You are the traveler who happened to dig it. By separating your identity from your actions, you turn a crushing weight back into a manageable goal. So I want you to do a final check on your compass. Is your bad feeling proportional to what has actually happened? Meaning, is it in line with what you did? Say for instance you forgot the deadline and you feel like your entire career is over and you're a fraud. That is the broken compass talking. That is shame. An irrational self-condemnation. If you feel a temporary sting. Realize you need to work harder tomorrow. Send an apology email. That is healthy guilt. That is fine. Do it, it's fine. The next time you feel heavy badness, ask yourself, is this a tool helping me grow, or is it the rock keeping me down? If it is not pointing towards an apology or a change of behavior, it is a rock. Leave it on a trail. You have miles to go, and you need your hands free to climb. Now we're going to look at how we can love someone without carrying their rocks. See, we've already set our own gear. We've let the baseball float, and we fixed our compasses. But as you look back into the bottom of your pack, you might find something strange, something you don't really recognize. A heavy, jogged rock that you don't remember picking up. Maybe it's your mother's unfulfilled dreams. Maybe it's your partner's chronic anxiety, or a friend's constant need for validation. These are borrowed rocks. Many of us are empathetic overpackers. We think that if we love someone, we have to carry their weight for them. We think that by feeling their pain, we are somehow making their trail easier. But look at the physics of the forest. If I take over 20-pound rock and put it into my bag, you might feel lighter for a mile. But now I am the one stumbling. I'm the one who can't see the view. Eventually, we both get stuck because the person who was supposed to lead is now exhausted to walk. See, there is a difference between caring with someone and caring for someone. Caring with someone, you walk beside them. You offer a hand when they trip. You encourage them. That is love. But when you're caring for them, you are taking their pack. You try to solve their problems, manage their emotions, and fix their past. This is a trap. When you carry someone else's rock, you actually rob them of the strength they would have gained by carrying it themselves. You are preventing their growth while ensuring your own burnout. Real support is having boundaries to say, I love you and I'm here for you, beside you, but I cannot walk your miles for you. I want to repeat that again. Real support is having the boundaries to say, I love you and I'm here for you, beside you, but I cannot walk your mouth for you. It is time for a handoff. Imagine that person is standing on a trail in front of you. Take that borrowed rock, that expectation, that guilt they have gave you, that should, and hold it out to them. Say it out loud or say it in your heart. I love you, but this belongs to you. I'm giving it back so that I can be strong enough to walk beside you. When you hand back the borrowed rock, you aren't being selfish. You're being sustainable. You are choosing to be a healthy traveler rather than a broken mind. And so we spend this episode talking about the trail, the weights, and the importance of naming what we carry. But I know that for many of you listening, it isn't just a theory. If you are struggling with specific triggers or find that this drift is constantly harming your life or your relationships, a more personalized approach can be transformative. As a sportive counselor, I am dedicated to enhancing the total well-being of my clients through a system approach to counseling. My goal is to help you achieve wholeness in your body, mind, and spirit. We won't just manage the symptom of despair. We will work together to understand the root causes of the feeling and foster real personal growth. If you feel like you're flying towards a foreshortened future, we can navigate your well-being together. I am committed to helping you facilitate self-care and support your bio-spiritual wellness. We'll develop a plan and I will be there to train, to guide, and to monitor you so you can make lasting changes. My mission is to help you protect yourself from the factors that fuel hopelessness and move you out of the trap for good. It is time to recalibrate your compass. You can contact me on the Dion Bicycle page or reach out via email at the dionlabu@gmail.com. That is Delta Echo Orange November Lima Alpha Bravo Unit @gmail.com. Please use the balanced mind as your subject line. As we prepare to leave this part of the trail, I want you to take one last look at the stump you left behind. See the rocks you've named. See the shreds you've identified. See the borrowed weights you've finally handed back. They are still there, resting in the dirt, but they are no longer in your backpack. The forest hasn't changed. The hills ahead are still steep, and the path might still be muddy in places. But you have changed. Your posture is different now. Your chin is up. your lungs have room to breathe because the straps aren't crushing your chest anymore. Remember this. The goal of a balanced mind isn't to reach the end of the forest as fast as possible. The goal is to walk the trail in a way that honors your soul. You aren't born to be a pack of animals in your past. You are born to be a traveler of your future. If you find yourself reaching for those old rocks tomorrow, and you might, because the weight is similar, just stop. Feel the air. Remind yourself that you already paid your dues to that memory. Pack only what heals. Leave the rest of the earth to reclaim. My name is Dion Bicycle, and this has been The Balanced Mind. I'll see you on the next stretch of our trail together. Keep on walking, keep on doing what you can. Remember, to keep your balance, you must keep moving. See you next week.